broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University. This is WSDL Ocean City 90.7 FM, Delmarva Public Radio. It's time now for a special writer's edition of Delmarva Today with host Harold Wilson.
I hung out in Sully's tattoo shop whenever I wasn't working. After his last customer had left and his ink was cleaned up, we'd take a blanket down to the beach and be together in the darkness, right there at the edge of the ocean. If we got too close to the edge, it would be like the love scene in that old movie, From Here to Eternity. I was Deborah Carr. Sometimes there'd be a noise out in the water, a different sound than lapping waves. I wondered if it was dolphins, if maybe they had a night shift. I can't find Sully's tattoo shop now, though. We are headed home, driving through Dewey Beach. None of the shops or hotels seem familiar. I used to sleep with a tattoo artist in a house along here somewhere, I told Mrs. Lewis. I was 17. She patted my frail hand. No matter, dear. It was the 60s. Those kind of things happened.
Catherine Reed, in her short story, I remember it was fun in Beach Nights, one of the books in Rehoboth Beach Reads. Welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson. In her short story, I remember it was fun, published in Beach Nights as part of the Rehoboth Beach Reads series of books, Catherine Reed mentions the famous Kiss on the Beach by Deborah Carr and Burt Lancaster. That kiss on the beach in the rolling surf, filmed in somber black and white, is certainly the most famous kiss in the movies. Erotic and exotic, it captured the interest of the censors in 1953. Who deleted 4 seconds from it. And it still captures our imagination after more than 60 years. Why is this scene still so powerful today? Certainly, it's the location that enhances the power of the scene. And the filmmakers knew that. A kiss in the drawing room can't compete with the sand, the exposure of open space, and the white-crested surf advancing and retreating. It was truly a kiss on the edge of eternity. There's something primal about the beach that draws us physically and emotionally. On the sand, next to the water, we are on the edge of the continent, on the edge of history, and perhaps the edge of time itself. We look at the vastness of the sea, and we are inspired by it. We love hearing it, smelling it, playing in it, walking next to it, photographing it, and certainly writing about it. And that's what we're talking about today, writing about our experience of the beach. Rehoboth Beach Reads is a series of themed books of short stories from an annual contest sponsored by Browse About Books in Rehoboth, Delaware. Nancy Sakadusky is the editor of the series, and she is my guest today. Nancy is the founder and owner of Cat and Mouse Press, also a small regional publishing company in Lewis, Delaware, as well as being editor of the Beach Reads series. I'm also happy to welcome to the program Robin Hill Page Glandon, author and freelance writer. Robin is the author of The Poet, The Portrait in Beach Nights, the current book in the Beach Reads series. Nancy and Robin, welcome to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition.
Thank you, Hal.
Glad to be here.
And welcome back to you, Nancy.
You're
getting to be an old hand.
Not like old fish.
and we'll keep that tradition alive.
All right,
as well. Our program will be in two parts today. The first will be a discussion of the Beach Read series with editor Nancy Sakadusky. And we'll talk to Robin Glandon about her story, The Portrait. The second part of the program will be a dramatic presentation of The Portrait, adapted for radio and featuring members of the Community Players of Salisbury, as well as music by Emma Dryben. Nancy, let me begin with you. What is the Beach Read series, and how did it come about?
Well, as you said, Hal, there is something about the beach, and there is the power to the beach, whether you get a kiss for eternity or not. And I saw an opportunity for local writers to be able to write stories that they would enjoy writing and that readers would enjoy reading. And so Rehoboth seemed the perfect setting. There's so many residents and visitors that enjoy Rehoboth and enjoy the beach there. And so I decided to create a contest that would lead to a series of books with collections of short beach reads.
And how many have there been?
We're working on the fifth one now. Beach Nights was the fourth. So the contest just ended this year, and the book will come out the end of this year. That will be Beach Life. That'll be the fifth in the series.
Oh, Beach Life this time. Well, that's a little broad, isn't
it? Others
have been a little more narrow than that.
I had some complaints about Beach Nights. Some of the authors felt it was a little too challenging. I think people enjoy the freedom to write pretty much what they like, so I purposely went broad this year.
I think you might think about The Beach Kiss. One of these days, and we'll all remember Deborah Carr and Burt Lancaster again. In fact, they'd probably appear in more than one of the stories.
That
would be submitted. Tell me a little bit about the rules. What are you looking for in these stories?
There are specific criteria that we publish on the website, but I would say that the key things are creativity, quality of writing, certainly, the fact that it serves as a beach read. We're not looking for the really serious, somber topics, unless there's a spirituality or an uplifting ending or something like that. These are light stories designed to be read at the beach. And that also fits the theme that year. So that's the main thing we're looking for. And we always seem to get a very eclectic selection. So we don't specify a genre. The only things we don't accept are writing for children, religious writing, erotica. So your kiss theme might be in trouble there.
No, uh-oh.
And what's the last one? Poetry. Poetry. Other than that, we take anything. And we've Robin wrote a story in one of the books. It was science fiction. We get all sorts of things. Historical fiction, certainly. Memoir. We had a Western one year. We had a Sherlock Holmes story one year. So people get very creative.
And the submission period. Tell us about the submission period.
The submission period is very long because I like to give people a good opportunity to think out their story. And all that does actually is everybody comes in at the last minute anyway. But the submission period is March 1st to July 1st each year.
So they're closed.
It's closed for this year.
This year.
Yeah, the judges are actually in the second phase of judging at this point. They're down to the semifinalists.
So our listeners need to be thinking about the theme of Beach Life.
No, Beach Life is closed. It'll be for next year.
Oh, that's the one that's closed.
And I haven't announced the theme for that one yet.
Oh, okay. Oh, so there's...
So Beach Kisses maybe.
So there's room. there's room for the Beach Kiss. I've read... frankly, most of the stories in the series. Mm-hmm. And I want you to say a little bit more about what a beach read is. What kind of length? I mean, my sense is a beach read is something you can take to the beach.
Mm-hmm.
And you can lay down on your blanket and...
Yes. And, I think it is an individual answer. I had a friend who took Anna Karenina to the beach. So I guess what you consider a beach read depends on who you are. But I would say most people think of something that they can read with the interruptions of children running around, getting up to get a snow cone or a French fry, and, something that's sort of light in content, easy to read, not too difficult, not a lot of plot lines. Short stories are ideal because you can read them in one setting. You go back and get something to drink or have lunch and then come back and read a second story. So I think they work very well. But I think it's, in general, it's just something light and fun to read.
And short enough so that you might be able to get it all read during your afternoon.
I think that's
afternoon.
It doesn't have to be. Certainly people read novels at the beach. But I think short stories really lend themselves for that reason, yes.
Yeah. Well, the current book is Beach Nights.
Mm-hmm.
And tell us a little bit about Beach Nights.
Okay. Well, again, we got a very eclectic series of stories, and these judges picked them individually. So I'm lucky that we end up with a diverse group each year, but we do. Just reading the titles, you can get an idea of how diverse these are. So some of the stories in this book, Stacy Fisher Can Dance the Tango, The Flight of the Songbird, The Vampire Surf Club, Cooking Lard and Candle Wax, Mermaid's Moon, Partners in Crime, Melvin and the Haunted Mansion. So you can get an idea. It's a really wide grouping of stories. So there's something for everyone.
Tell us about one of these stories, if
okay.
you would. Of course, we're gonna hear in our next segment. We're gonna hear.
Mm-hmm.
A dramatization of one of them. But tell us a little bit about one of the
stories. Well, I'll tell you the one that won first prize, and
okay.
that was Kathleen Martin's story, Flight of the Songbird. And it's a very interesting, unusual story. And I tell writers when I give workshops to follow the guidelines, but then think beyond and try to think of something really outside of the norm. And this story certainly fell into that category. In fact, the author told me people had discouraged her from entering because they thought she wouldn't have a chance. It's a very unusual story about a young African-American girl. It's historical fiction. She comes to Rehoboth to work in the hotel where her mother is a maid. And she ends up singing at a little jazz club in one of the hotels. And so it's based on reality of the hotels of the time period and certainly the culture of the time period. So a little bit not typical of a beach read because it does deal with racial issues and so forth, but just a delightful story. The character is wonderful. The language is beautiful. She's a very accomplished writer, and it really stood out. The judges really, really liked that story, and it's a very interesting story, and frankly, one that some people might not think of as a beach read. It's not a romance. It's not intrigue or thriller, but it's a lovely story to read.
In contrast to that story, I the name of it slips my mind right now, but the one with Melvin.
Oh, yes.
In it, which is a very, very different
yes.
kind of
yes.
Tell
That's
us about
Weldon
that
Burge's
story,
Melvin and the Haunted Mansion, and it takes place in the Haunted Mansion ride or game on in Funland, where you ride the little car through the Haunted Mansion. And it has some sort of supernatural aspects to it. Weldon is actually a publisher who publishes fantasy and science fiction and so forth. So this is his field. And so he used that to stay within the guidelines again, but create a story that really was different from what you'd say the typical beach read is, but very entertaining. I'm sure there were people who absolutely loved that story and other people who said, that's not for me, which is perfectly fine. That's why it's nice to have a collection.
Well, yeah, not all stories are for everybody.
Right.
I was taken with Melvin because he's sort of this ghost, but
yes.
he's sort of not
yes,
a
yes,
ghost.
Yes. And actually,
a very unique setting
yeah.
For this quasi maybe mm-hmm. ghost, maybe not.
And I think it also is a good example of how the writers will write a story and yet tap into real places in Rehoboth. So the story may be fictional, but they're mentioning places, they're mentioning experiences and activities that the readers identify with. Most people who have been to Rehoboth have been to Funland or one of the arcades. People will mention specific restaurants or things like getting Coors Custard or Thrasher's French fries or something like that. They'll mention, obviously, swimming at the beach, going out at dinner, going to a nightclub or something. And so you get familiar with the area and you say, oh, I did that, or oh, I know what that. And it gives the reader an extra little thrill.
Well, who are these writers that submit, and how are they chosen?
The writers, anybody can submit, first off. You don't have to live in Rehoboth or even have any connection directly to Rehoboth. And we do indeed get entries from all over. This year, we actually got an entry from Australia. So I think people have heard about the contest. Maybe they visit Rehoboth Beach and pick up a card and go home or whatever. So we do get entries from all over. But I would say the overwhelming number, and particularly the overwhelming number that end up in the book, tend to be our local authors in terms of Delaware, Maryland, perhaps Pennsylvania, Virginia, New Jersey. They're more familiar with the area.
And who are the judges?
The judges change each year. They're always six because of the way I run the judging process, where they initially work in three teams of two. And I like to have a lot of different points of view represented. So I try to get judges that have been writers, editors, educators, different geography, some in Maryland, some in Pennsylvania or Delaware, so that there's every opportunity is given the writer to succeed.
And how do they function? Do they read everything that comes in?
It starts out where I split up the entire group of entries. I split it into three and give each team of two judges a third of the entries, just randomly picked. I alphabetize them, so they're, even if they're the same writer, they get into two piles usually. And they independently, each team of two looks through those entries and picks out their top 10. And that's the process that just ended. So I have those 30 stories. Sometimes there's overlap where the judges have picked the same story if they're on the same team reading the same stories. Then they all get those semifinalists. So whatever number that is, this year was 51 stories amongst them. They all are reading right now those 51 stories, and they're to pick five independently. They don't talk to one another. They each pick five, and they rank them, and they send them back to me, and I can order them then by points and see which ones are the highest scoring. And those, I just go from the top, and those are what end up in the book, however many I can fit based on the length. If there are a lot of really long stories, there are fewer. If there are more short stories, I can fit more. And then for the cash prize winners, the top three that win the prize provided by Browseabout, $500, $250, and $100, I like the judges to agree by consensus. Mm-hmm. So we get together as a group and they sort of talk it out and compare notes, and someone will say, well, I like this because that, and someone else, I like this because that. And together we agree which one gets first, second, and third. And that really is my way of ruling out anybody having any special influence or have any advantage.
Well, it sounds like an excellent process.
Thank you,
Nancy, and you certainly come out with a good product.
Yes,
there's no question about that.
They're fun books.
Let me ask you about Cat and Mouse Press. What is your press, and what do you produce?
Well, in keeping with our name, we call ourselves the Playful Publisher. So we look for things that are fun, interesting, have to have a connection to the Delmarva region. So all of our books, with the exception of my How to Write Short Stories book, which is really just based on the contest experience, but every other, the novels and short story collections, all have a connection to the Delmarva region. And I try to produce books that are of high quality. They're all professionally copy edited. I go through them carefully, but then a professional copy editor goes through line by line. They're professionally produced. Each of them has an original cover. The Beach Read series are all done by Emery Au. Each one is an original painting done just for that book. So, and that's why they win. The Beach Nights just won a national first prize from the National Federation of Press Women. I think that's why they win awards. We really take a lot of trouble to make the books the best they can be.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
On that, that's wonderful. Robin, your short story, The Portrait, is in Beach Nights. And as I said earlier, it's going to be presented as a drama in the next segment of our program. Tell us a bit about yourself, and without giving too much away, a little bit about the genesis of the portrait.
Well, I'm so happy to be here, Hal, and I'm so excited about getting the portrait done as a radio drama. I have a music drama and writing background. I am a local kid, and I grew up straight up 13 here in Harrington, Delaware, about a quarter mile north of the state fairgrounds. So I'm real local, and I spent pretty much all my summers in Rehoboth Beach. So that was my first beach and my most beloved beach. So when I got the opportunity to write about it, I was absolutely thrilled. I kind of had a going away and coming back where I went to University of Delaware as a piano major, switched over to theater my second year, and graduated with a theater arts degree with a minor in English journalism. And then I decided I wanted to do the acting thing. And my mom said, well, thought you were going to be a musician or a writer. And I said, well, let me do the acting thing while I'm young and crazy. And then when I settle down a little, I'll do your writing thing. How's that? So we struck a deal, and it pretty much worked out that way. Because I went to Philadelphia, New York, Los Angeles, and worked for about 20 years in the entertainment industry, performing and in the business end. And then, you know, I was out in California. The folks got older, and I decided to come home and be close to them, back to Delaware. So I moved back to Newark by the U of D and joined the Newark Arts Alliance. And I started writing poetry again and doing it at the open mic nights, which are absolutely terrific. We have a wonderful community there. And the director then, who's Dennis Lawson, you might know, he suggested, you know, maybe I should try to put a story in one of these Beach Reads books. He had just had a story of his published in the Beach House, the first book. And he said, yeah, you should give it a try. So I said, you know, I had been writing in Los Angeles in local magazines, and I had written a screenplay that almost got sold, and doing a lot of freelance writing. And I thought, you know, it would be really nice to get back to the writing. So I wrote a story, sent it in, and it got published. And that just boosted my confidence again. It got me going again. And I started writing more poetry. I started reading at more open mics. And then my husband and I, who's an excellent percussionist, he and I teamed up, and we started doing this little act with my poetry, spoken word, with percussion. And then we wrote songs, and then we started doing little songs. And I'm writing more and more. And then we came up to the beach nights. And as Nancy had said, it was challenging. That one was challenging. But I thought, what's the first thing that comes to me with beach nights? Because I really wanted to get in the book again. So I thought about it, and I got this image. And it was from back in the 70s, from when I was in high school. There was this really major hit show that we all ran home and watched at 4 o'clock after school called Dark Shadows. And we had a vampire, Barnabas Collins, and this big gothic mansion and all this intrigue and romance. And that's the picture that came into my mind. And then the story went from there. And it was just fun to write. And then I wrote another one that was totally different, about two teenage girls, and both of them got in the book. And I was just like so excited and so happy. And they both won awards from Delaware Press Association. And I know I speak for myself and all my fellow writers. We appreciate so much the opportunities Nancy and Cat and Mouse Press give us to get our work out there. And Browse About Books is an amazing sponsor and supporter of the arts and of writers and of, you know, the whole local arts scene. and we just love them.
Well, Browse About Books sponsors the contest. Mm-hmm. What role do they? They play a significant role.
They're the sole sponsor and have been from the first year. So they put up the prize money.
And the prize money is?
$500 for first prize, $250 for second prize, and $100 for third prize.
Which, frankly, is not a small commitment.
Not at all. And it's not a gift certificate. It's cash. And it's hard to get an award like that. And it's nice that Browse About is willing to step up in that way. Yeah. It's very generous.
Yeah. And then they let us do book signings there. Mm-hmm. And we all just so much enjoy those. Those are so much fun.
Well, Robin, you've got the portrait. Here. What are you working on now? What are you looking for?
Well, I'm still writing poetry, and Kenny and I are still doing our little duo thing, and I love my open mic nights. I'm doing more of those at Newark Arts and the Jackson Inn and wherever I can find a great opportunity. And I love that because I get to put my music and my acting and my writing all together. This year, I decided to send some of my nonfiction sort of memoir stories into Guidepost Magazine. My mom and I have been big fans of that magazine for years, and people kept telling me you should send your stories there. So I said, what the heck? I sent two out, and a few months later, I got a call from an editor of Mysterious Ways. And she said, well, we like your stories, and we want to publish them. So they published three pieces. There's one that's in this current issue. And I went to visit them in the New York office last month. They invited me to come over, and we went over and met them. They're just the most wonderful team. And we talked about some more topics. And so I'm working on some more stories for them. And I'm also working on the Delaware Division of the Arts deadline for a fellowship. That deadline is August 1st, and I'm going to apply for one of those. So I'm working on that, and we're just having a lot of fun writing.
So the fellowship is for, again, what is your fellowship that you're applying for?
Well, they have all different categories in the arts. I'm going to go for fiction. You can go for poetry, nonfiction, or fiction in the literary. There's also a playwriting. I actually have a screenplay that I wrote, the one I mentioned in Los Angeles, about Fatty Arbuckle, the silent film star. And it's wonderful. We almost sold it to John Candy, but he passed away on the set of a film when we were in negotiations. Mm-hmm. So the screenplay's been in the drawer, but I've just been talking to several people about possibly rewriting it as a stage play. So that's another thing kind of on the back burner. So you're just having a lot of fun writing.
It sounds like you're very, very busy.
Oh, yes.
These days, too. That's wonderful. Your story in Guidepost, the recent story, what is that all about? I understand there's some personal significance to that story.
Yes. Well, Kenny and I had a very odd relationship where we were sweethearts when we were 15. He went to Caesar Rodney, I went to Lake Forest, and we broke up when we were 16, and I never saw him again, except for one time, right after we graduated from high school, in Rehoboth. And he walked away from me, and I never saw him again, and that was in the 70s. So let me tell you what a thrill I get when I walk down that stretch of sidewalk down by Dolly's with him now. I did not see him for 35 years. I saw him 35 years later by an odd set of circumstances, and we fell in love, we got married, and we are now celebrating our 9th wedding anniversary today, as a matter of fact. And we had this odd story, and I had told the editor about it, and she called me up one day. She goes, we're looking for some love stories. You have a really funny one, don't you? And I said, yeah. She goes, well, write it, because I want to publish it. So I wrote it, sent it in, and they published it in, coincidentally, the issue that was for our anniversary month, which I thought was really nice, and a couple funny pictures of us when we were in high school with all the hair.
Yeah, you both had a lot of hair then. I saw the picture.
Oh, yes.
Ryan Guy Poach.
Those were the days.
Are in mysterious ways. Well, let me come back to you, Nancy, for a moment. How to write winning short stories. Writing a book like that is no small thing. Tell us a little bit more about your book.
Well, I noticed during these contests that there was a pattern. There were some errors that people made over and over again that were actually rather simple errors that could be corrected and make all the difference. There were stories that would come in that were great stories except for one thing. And that one thing, if corrected, could make the author a published author. So I thought, well, I'm going to write a book that's very practical, here's what you need to do, but with a checklist. And so it's not philosophical. It's very much of a workbook or a guidebook on how to turn a regular story into a winning story. And I used my experience. I interviewed some of the judges we've had, and then I did an awful lot of research in books and blogs and websites and everything I could find that talked about, how judges chose stories, what made the difference for them, what they looked for. And that's a lot of what's in there. Some of it applies to any kind of writing, to be honest. Some of it is mechanics and structure and the basics of good writing, choosing a good title, editing your work. I mean, some things like that. But a lot of it are some things that people might not think about. And I've heard from a number of the authors that got into Beach Nights that they had used my book successfully. And I'm interested to hear when we choose the stories for this next book, Beach Life, whether any of them had not gotten into previous books, then read my book and now got in, because wouldn't that be fun?
Well, let me ask you, we're almost out of time here, but let me ask you, I put you on the spot.
Uh-oh.
for just a moment. What if I want to write a story for Beach Reads? What are the three things you would say to me that I've got to do here?
Okay. Well, first, I would say something I said earlier: follow the guidelines. Because with any piece of written work, you always follow the guidelines. They're rules. They're not suggestions. But then look for a way to go different, way to go beyond the normal. Then take the time to choose a good title. I see a real opportunity squandered a lot of times where people will, for example, the theme this year is Beach Life. Well, don't just call your story Beach Life, for heaven's sake. Here's an opportunity. It's the first thing the judges see. It's the first thing the editor sees. It's the first thing the reader sees. Have some, take some time with it. And I think the other thing that is often a squandered opportunity is the ending. I think when people are writing to a word count, they get nervous when they get close to the end, and they sort of just and then they went down to the beach and had a picnic, and they that's the end. Take the time, edit up front so you have more time at the end to really end the story well, because that's where you leave the reader and that's where you leave the judge. So have them sitting back in their chair going, that was a good story.
Okay. Well, Nancy Sakadusky and Robin Glandon, thank you very, very much for joining me today on Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll present our radio drama, The Portrait. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. And now for our drama, The Portrait, by Robin Hill Page Glandon, adapted for radio by your host.
Eva was deep in thought as she drove from her Manhattan apartment to the rental cottage in Delaware. Her recent divorce and the death soon after of her best friend had left her sad and emotionally exhausted. Now, the final chapter of her second novel was due in 10 days, and her mind was paralyzed with a bad case of writer's block. After the great success of her first book, Eva was terrified at the thought of disappointing with her second. How could she top or even equal her first novel if she couldn't find a strong ending for the sequel? She had been working on the book for months in the apartment she once shared with her ex-husband. Every corner held a memory. Lonely, depressed, and unable to concentrate, she'd logged onto Facebook to take a quick break. That's when she saw the ad.
Quaint Victorian cottage. In a private setting, minutes from Rehoboth Beach. All amenities, but with old-world charm. Two bedrooms, one bath. Well-appointed kitchen and lovely front porch. Cozy, quiet retreat, low off-season rates.
Before she had a chance to change her mind, she dialed the listed number.
Donya Wedwidge here. May I help you?
Yes, my name is Eva Markwell. I saw the ad for your cottage, and I'd like to rent it this week if it's available.
Well, hello, Eva Markwell. I'm the owner, and it is indeed available. When would you like to check in?
Well, how much is a week?
How much would you like to pay?
Well, I don't know. How about 500 for the week?
That will be fine. You may check in this evening if you like. I'm occupied during the day every day, but I'm always available in the evenings after 7.
Perfect. I'll arrive around 7.
Yes, then. When you turn in the driveway, the cottage will be on the right. Continue up the drive to my home. I'll give you the key.
Eva packed quickly, put the address into her GPS, and followed the driving instructions to the property in Rehoboth. The cottage was beautiful. Surrounded by trees, hydrangea, and rose bushes, golden light shone in the windows, and two lanterns on either side of the front door illuminated the porch. A flagstone walkway with a rose-covered arbor led to the door. It reminded Eva of a scene in a Thomas Kincaid painting. She continued down the driveway, and there, partially obscured by stately trees, was a huge Victorian mansion. Although the exterior was a bit shabby and the yard needed some care, the building was magnificent. Eva parked in the circular driveway, and a man stepped out onto the wraparound porch. He was tall, slender, and handsome, but his attire, black trousers, a starched white shirt, gray pinstriped vest, and a wide tie that looked more like a silk scarf, seemed oddly formal for someone who lived at the beach.
"Welcome, Miss Markwell. Please excuse the shabby appearance of the property. My gardener has taken leave, and the exterior of the house needs some attention, but sadly I just haven't had the time nor the inclination lately to address those issues."
"It's lovely, Mr. Wedgeworth. And please, call me Eva."
"I certainly will, if you will agree to call me Daniel. Now, please come in."
"It's a deal, Mr. Daniel."
The luxurious foyer featured a sparkling crystal chandelier and led to a spacious parlor with high ceilings and arched windows. A marble-mantled fireplace with a discreet fire took the chill off the late September evening and offered a reassuring welcome. Oil paintings adorned the walls of the room and complemented its elegant Victorian furniture.
"Please sit and have a cup of tea. Or would you prefer coffee? You must be tired after your long drive."
"Tea would be lovely, Daniel. Thank you."
Eva settled on a tapestry love seat, and Daniel brought in a silver tea service with china cups and saucers.
"A teaspoon of sugar, no milk."
"How did you know?"
"Lucky guess."
Daniel sat down across from Eva in a leather wingback chair.
"Oh, let me pay you for the rental. 500, I believe we said."
"Yes, thank you, Eva."
Daniel accepted the envelope with Eva's check and placed it, unopened, on the end table beside him. He studied her so intently that Eva felt uneasy.
"So, Daniel, please tell me about these paintings."
"Yes, I'm an artist, you see, and these are paintings I've done since moving to Rehoboth. My wife and I were born and raised in London, and we fell in love with this town and this house when we visited on holiday. We moved here and I began to paint seascapes. I'm a bit of a local celebrity, you know, so please don't mention that I'm here, or that you're staying at the cottage. I'm trying to get a special painting completed. Since my wife died, I like to be left alone to work.
Oh, Daniel, I'm so sorry about your wife.
She went back to visit her family in London one summer and was killed in a motor car accident. She was so beautiful. I loved her dearly and miss her so. Well, enough of that. Let me show you my work.
Daniel led her around the room, pointing out details in each painting. With a wave of his hand, he indicated a portrait bearing his own likeness.
I always thought that every artist should paint a self-portrait. I was going to paint my wife's portrait after I finished mine. But, well, there was the accident before I... After her death, I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I would very much like to paint you, Eva.
No, I don't think so.
Eva felt panicked now. She thought that she might be in some danger. Here she was, alone with a strange man in his home at night. Now, after a brief conversation, he wanted to paint her, with or without clothes.
I think maybe this was a mistake. I'll stay in a hotel in town.
You misunderstand, Eva. Your portrait. That's all. I would just like to paint your portrait.
Daniel went to a closet and took out an exquisite dark purple velvet cape.
I can see you wearing this. With your blonde hair and blue eyes, it would make a lovely portrait. I have no sinister motives, I assure you. Look at my work. I don't paint nudes, if that's what you're thinking. If you feel uncomfortable, Eva, about sitting for the portrait, I understand. But please do stay.
Their eyes met, and she knew that she had nothing to fear.
Okay, Daniel, I'll stay in the cottage, and I'll think about the portrait.
Think about it overnight. And if you decide yes, just come by at 7 tomorrow evening, after 7. Here's the key to the cottage. Make yourself at home, and if there's anything you need, please call. I'm always up late.
I shall. I'm a night owl, too.
Eva drove back to the cottage. It was immaculately clean and tastefully decorated in soft blues, seafoam greens, and buttery yellows. There were china vases full of her favorite flower, pale pink roses, in every room. What a lovely coincidence, she thought. She brought her suitcases in and set up her laptop on the dining room table. The kitchen cupboards were well stocked. Again, another curious coincidence. On the table were a china teacup with a pink rose pattern and a matching small plate with her favorite cookies, shortbreads. She made a cup of tea and took her snack to the dining room as she powered up her laptop. Suddenly, an idea popped into her head and she started typing. Words flowed out of her mind and into her fingers as they flew across the keyboard. At 4 a.m. she stopped, exhausted, but she nearly had the ending for her book. The brass bed in the master bedroom was soft and comfortable. For the past few months, Eva had been plagued by insomnia, but she fell asleep immediately and slept soundly. When she woke, the sun streamed through the window. Eva made a pot of coffee and went back to work, refreshed and inspired. At 5 o'clock, Eva drove into town. She chose a restaurant on the boardwalk with Victorian decor and an ocean view. The combination of the mansion, the cottage, and the restaurant made her feel as if she had been transported back in time to the Victorian era. After dinner, she sat on a bench on the boardwalk and looked out over the water as daylight faded. A warm breeze stirred, and Eva felt a peace she had not known in a long time. She returned to the cottage having made a decision. She would let Daniel paint her portrait. When she knocked on the front door of the mansion, Daniel appeared immediately.
You're going to let me paint you. Wonderful. Wonderful.
He set a blank canvas on an easel and posed Eva on an emerald green chaise in the center of the room, next to a small table with a vase of pink roses. He draped the purple cape around her shoulders and tied her hair back with a satin ribbon. Each time she felt his cool touch, a shiver ran through her body. He meticulously adjusted the lighting and stepped back.
Perfect. Yes, absolutely perfect.
That week was one of the best of Eva's life. Her writing flowed effortlessly as she worked during the day. The final chapter seemed to almost write itself. Then each evening she walked to Daniel's house. First they worked in the studio, then retired to the parlor and talked over a glass of wine or a cup of tea. She told him of her distress after the disintegration of her marriage and the death of her friend. Daniel spoke briefly about his wife. They had been together nearly 25 years, but had no children. Eva asked to see pictures of her. He said they were all put away because looking at her brought back too many memories and made him too sad. Eva told him about her life in New York and about her passion for writing. Daniel recounted stories of his wealthy family and growing up in London. Painting was always his passion and his only career. All too soon, it was Eva's last day in Rehoboth. Her novel was complete and the manuscript off to her editor. She wasn't ready to leave, but there was no choice. Her publisher had scheduled a meeting with the Times for a potential review. She loved the cottage and Rehoboth, and she had also grown very fond of Daniel. That he felt the same way about her, she was sure. A special bond had been formed, and she was certain their connection might lead to something deeper. She pushed that thought to the back of her mind, not wanting to get her hopes up. That night, Eva strolled down the driveway at the usual time. Daniel was seated in one of the wicker chairs on the porch and greeted her with a warm embrace. Her heart skipped a beat.
Your portrait is finished, Eva. Come in and see.
Daniel led Eva into the parlor. The painting was on an easel by the fireplace. The colors were rich and vibrant, and her likeness had been captured perfectly. Her skin appeared luminous, and Daniel had painted her eyes with such depth that they seemed to peer out from the canvas and look around the room. The pose on the chaise, the way Daniel had styled her hair, and the velvet cape with its black lace collar made her look as if she had just stepped out of a Victorian romance novel. Once again, as in the Boardwalk restaurant, Eva had a strange yet familiar feeling that she was living in a bygone era.
Oh, Daniel, it's beautiful. I love it.
Thank you, Eva. You're a beautiful subject, so it was easy to create a good piece of work.
They sat together on the love seat and talked late into the night. Finally, Eva looked at her watch.
I hate to go, Daniel, but I better get some sleep. I have a long drive back to the city tomorrow. What time should I check out?
Whenever you like. There's no hurry.
Well, I have to be back in New York in the afternoon, but after that I'm free. I'm relieved to have my book finished. It was so easy to write once I got here. I love Rehoboth and your cottage. I feel right at home here. Perhaps I could get back after my meeting.
I'm glad it worked out so well, and so pleased I was able to create this painting of you. I believe I'll hang it in my next exhibit.
How exciting. Please, let me know the details and I'll be there.
It will be somewhere local. I'll be sure to let you know.
Would you like your key now?
Yes. I won't be available during the day tomorrow when you leave. Just lock the door from the inside and pull it shut behind you.
Daniel took the key, and Eva felt that same light coolness when their fingers touched. He kissed her lightly on the cheek.
I enjoyed our time together this past week, Eva. You don't know how much it's meant to me.
I've enjoyed it too, Daniel. Very much.
After another awkward silence, Eva walked to the front door, and Daniel followed her onto the porch. She paused to take one more look at the mansion. He was standing on the porch, watching her. She waved, hoping he might call her to come back, but he just returned her wave, turned, and went into the house. Eva wondered why he hadn't seized the opportunity to suggest a plan for them to meet again in Rehoboth. She thought there was a strong mutual attraction. Perhaps when her portrait was on exhibit, he would call and ask her to come back for a visit. Her sleep was fitful that night, and she dreamed that she and Daniel were dancing in a grand ballroom. He was dressed in a tuxedo, and she was wearing a lavender satin gown and the purple velvet cape. An orchestra played a waltz as they glided along the dance floor. And then he was gone, and she was alone on the dance floor, turning, turning. Suddenly, a loud noise jarred Eva awake. It was morning. She dressed quickly and went outside. Engine sounds were coming from the direction of the mansion. She ran down the driveway and saw construction vehicles. Workmen were fencing in the area around the house.
Excuse me. Excuse me, what are you doing?
Hello, ma'am. I'm the foreman here. Name's John. You'll need to stay out of the way. We're taking this house down.
What? There must be a mistake. Daniel Wedgeworth lives here. I saw him just last night, and he said nothing about this. Are you sure you have the right property?
Yes, ma'am. This old mansion is structurally unsound. The property was bought by a developer and ordered for demolition. He's going to build townhouses here.
That can't be. Daniel lives here. This is his home.
You mean the artist? Yeah, I heard about him. Saw some of his paintings once. This was his home, but that was a long time ago. It's been abandoned for years. Story I heard is his wife died, and he died soon after. Died of a broken heart's what the story says.
But I rented this cottage this week. I've spent every evening here with him. He painted my portrait.
I don't know what you're talking about, lady. This place might have been something back in the day, but it's a mess now. As you can see, no, you couldn't have been inside it recently.
But I was. Go inside. It's beautiful. You'll see. It was just last night.
John sighed and took a key out of his pocket. He opened the front door and stepped aside so Eva could enter. The interior was in shambles, and a musty odor hung thick in the air. In the foyer, strips of paint and chunks of plaster had fallen from the ceiling and walls. Eva ran to the parlor and steadied herself against the doorway as she gazed at the bare walls and the empty easel next to the fireplace. All the paintings were gone. Every piece of furniture was draped in sheets and covered with dust and cobwebs.
You all right, ma'am?
I don't know. He finished my portrait yesterday. It was on that easel last night, and his paintings were on the walls.
I don't know what to tell you, ma'am. Why don't you go to the Rehoboth Museum? Martha Williams knows local history. Might be able to help you.
Eva ran back to the cottage, loaded her suitcase in the car, then, with one last look at the cottage, locked the door and pulled it shut behind her. An elderly woman behind a desk in the museum looked up as Eva entered.
Miss Williams?
Yes. May I help you?
I hope so, Miss Williams.
Martha listened politely to Eva's story and looked increasingly perplexed. She shook her head.
Daniel Wedgeworth's wife died in 1902, and Daniel passed away the following year. His sister came from London to clear out his personal belongings. She donated all his paintings to the museum. The property has been tied up in red tape for years, but a developer finally purchased it. A shame that charming home is being taken down. But come, we have a room devoted to his paintings.
Martha led Eva to a room in the back of the museum. The paintings were those she remembered seeing at the mansion. But in an alcove were two paintings that took her breath away. Daniel's self-portrait and the portrait he had painted of her.
That one of Daniel was in the parlor, and this is the portrait he painted of me this past week.
I'm sorry, dear. That's a portrait of Mr. Wedgeworth's wife, Evangeline. But, my goodness, you do bear a strong resemblance to Evangeline Wedgeworth.
Eva trembled and tried to speak, but the words wouldn't come.
See the pink roses in the painting? They were her favorite.
A great thank you to our cast, our narrator, Judy Hearn, Eva Markwell, Megan Davis, Daniel Wedgeworth, Tom Welch, John the Foreman, Jim King, Martha Williams, Robin Finley, and on the keyboard, Emma Dreeben. And thank all of you for listening to Delmarva Today, Writer's Edition. I'm your host, Harold Wilson.